The Vistula threatened that too. His wife was still there. Watched closely by the local Nazi party chiefs, she would not be able to leave until the very last moment. Just over 24 hours later, Guderian staff at Zossen received confirmation that the attack was now hours rather than days away. Red Army sappers were clearing minefields at night, and tank corps were being brought forward into the bridgeheads. Hitler ordered that the panzer reserves on the Vistula front should be moved forward, despite warnings that this would bring them within range of Soviet artillery. Some senior officers began to wonder whether Hitler subconsciously wanted to lose the war. The Red Army seemed to make a habit of attacking in atrocious weather conditions. German veterans, accustomed to this pattern, used to call it weather for Russians. Soviet troops were convinced that they had a distinct advantage in winter warfare, whether through frost or mud. Their comparatively low rates of frostbite and trench foot were attributed to the traditional Russian army use of rough linen foot bandages instead of socks. Weather forecasts had foretold a strange winter. After the hard cold of January, heavy rain and wet snow were predicted. An order went out. Leather boots must be mended. The Red Army had improved in so many ways. Its heavy weaponry, the professionalism of its planning, the camouflage and control of operations which had frequently caught the Germans off balance. Yet some weaknesses remained. The worst was the chaotic lack of discipline, which seems astonishing in a totalitarian state. Part of the problem came from the terrible attrition among young officers. It was a hard school indeed for 17 and 18-year-old junior lieutenants in the infantry. At that time, wrote the novelist and war correspondent Konstantin Simonov, young people were becoming adult in a year, a month, or even in the course of one battle. Many, of course, never survived that first battle. Determined to prove themselves worthy of commanding veterans, some of whom were old enough to be their fathers, they showed reckless courage and suffered for it. Indiscipline came also from the dehumanized way in which Red Army soldiers were treated by their own authorities. And, of course, the strengths and weaknesses of the complex national character played its part too. The Russian infantryman, as one writer put it, is hardy, undemanding, careless, and a convinced fatalist. It is these characteristics which make him incomparable. An ordinary soldier in a rifle division provided a summary in his diary of the changing moods of his comrades. First state, soldier with no chiefs around. He is a grumbler. He threatens and shows off. He is keen to pocket something or grab someone in a stupid argument. One can see from this irritability that the soldier's life is hard for him. Second state, soldier in the presence of chiefs, submissive and inarticulate, readily agrees with what he is told, easily believes promises, blossoms when praised and is eager to admire the strictness of officers whom he makes fun of behind their backs. Third state, working together or in battle. Here he is a hero. He won't leave his comrade in danger. He dies quietly, as if it is still part of his work. Tank troops in the Red Army were in particularly good heart. Having been as demoralized as Soviet aviation in the early part of the war, they were starting to enjoy heroic status. Vasily Grossman, another novelist and war correspondent, now found tankists almost as fascinating as he had found snipers at Stalingrad. He described them admiringly as cavalrymen, artillerymen, and mechanics all rolled in one. But the greatest strength of the Red Army was the burning idea that they were finally within striking distance of the Reich. The violators of the Soviet motherland were about to discover the true meaning of the proverb, "You will harvest what you have sown." The basic concept of the campaign had been decided in outline by the end of October 1944. The Stavka, the Soviet supreme headquarters, was headed by Marshal Stalin, as he had promoted himself after the Battle of Stalingrad. Stalin intended to keep full control. He allowed commanders a latitude of action which their German counterparts envied, and, unlike Hitler, he would listen carefully to counter-arguments. Nevertheless, he had no intention of allowing Red Army commanders to get above themselves as the moment of victory approached. He stopped the usual practice of appointing representatives of the Stavka to oversee operations. Instead, he took on this role himself, even though he still had no intention of going anywhere near the front. Stalin also decided